The slide you missed is just the one about me, so I talked about me, so never mind. What are graph databases? Who of you has already worked with the graph database? Oh, couple. Good. The other ones, do you know what graph databases are? What they are supposed to store? Okay. So then I will just give the introduction because only half of the group knows it. So what are graph databases? Graph databases store so-called schema-free objects, which they name vertices. And you can imagine them as one row in a relational table, with the difference that you do not say which attributes you have on each of those rows. So each of the vertices can have different attributes, if you like. Then they store relations between those vertices, which are called edges. And you can compare them with these many-to-many relations in a relational database. Importantly, edges have a direction. So one of the vertices is the start, and the other side is the target, or source and target. One example is on the left-hand side. We have a couple of vertices. For example, this one, the attribute is name, which is Alice, age 32. We have a Bob over here, and we have a hobby over there. Those are the vertices. And then we have the relation, the connection between those. So for example, Alice has a hobby called dancing. We could store all these things in a relational world. No problem at all. Difference now is in the mechanisms that we have to query the database. First of all, edges can be queried in both directions. So I can say, I start at Alice, and I only want to follow edges that point out of Alice. Or I start, for example, at the hobby, and I want to follow only edges that point into the vertex that where I am. Or I can even say, I don't care in which direction the edges point to. Just go as long as there is one edge. Can do the same thing in relational world, no problem. But you can also say, you can easily query a range of edges. So pick a random starting point and say, please go 2 to 5 edges. 1 edge, 2 edge, 3 edges. 1 edge, 2 edge, 3, 5. It's a one liner in a graph database. For relational database, classical relational database, you need to do a lot of joins. First, you do a join with 2 steps. Do the second statement with 3 join steps, then one with 4 join steps, one with 5, and then a final one to put all of the results together. Even more, you can say, I don't know how many edges I have to take. Please go as long as you find the first element that matches my filter conditions. If you need 1 edge, 2 edge, or 500, I don't care. Just do it. And you can even say, please pick 2 of those vertices and give me the shortest connection. 1, 2 edges. That would be the result. In many cases, the shortest path is not deterministic because there may be a lot of paths having the same length to find the same object. What are typical graph queries? Queries that graph databases perform very, very good at. For example, give me all the friends of Alice. I start at Alice, and I want to go 1 step and find all the connected vertices. Give me all the friends of Alice. So now, starting at Alice, go 2 steps. But everything that is reachable within 1 step should not be part of the result. What is the linking path between Alice and Eve? So we just pick 2 random vertices and want to find the shortest path to them. And as I said, this is only 1 possible result. Also possible would be Alice to Charlie to Eve. Would have the same length. We need 2 edges in both cases. Or we can say, if we are standing at a train station, we buy a ticket. And the ticket says, you can go up to 6 stations from now on and switch as many lines as you like. Where can I go? For a graph database, it's easy to find out that you can go up to here or over there if you just follow those rules. But the most commonly used query in a graph database is a so-called pattern matching. Pattern matching is that you describe a part of your graph, a subgraph, with some unknown components, and you just match this pattern onto your entire graph database and find all these subgraphs that can fit those unknown components such that the pattern is matched. So for example, please give me all the users that share two hobbies with Alice. So the pattern is Alice has a relation to one hobby, has a relation to a different hobby, so those two are not equal. And then we need to find a friend that has a relation to this hobby and to that hobby as well. And the friend should be the result. And of course, we can make it extremely complicated. Give me all the products that at least one of my friends has bought, together with a product that I already own. So we have Alice has bought a product. We need to find someone that is a direct friend to Alice, who has bought the same product and has bought something else, which Alice does not have a relation to, because this product most likely is useful for Alice. So we would like to recommend it to her. What are non-typical graph queries? So queries that the graph databases could probably find an answer to, but they are not optimized for those. And short answer is everything that only is based on the attributes on the objects that you have, that doesn't care for the relations between them. So graph databases are good when you search alongside the relations and are bad if you just need to look at the objects. So bad query would be, give me all the users which have an age attribute between 21 and 35. Because that would mean we need to do a full table scan. And as graph databases are organized differently than relational databases, this is even more costly than a full table scan in a relational world. Or give me the age distribution of all users, same reason. Group all the users by their name, even worse, because I do the full table scan and then do some grouping afterwards. The reason why this is so expensive and the other thing is so cheap is the query mechanism that is behind there, and that is called a traversal. How this works, I would like to explain by a simple example. So we are iterating down two edges, so two steps starting at the vertex, and apply some filters on each of the components that we find. What does the database do if we issue such a query? First of all, it picks a start vertex. Always needs one starting point for its query mechanism. Then it takes a look at all the edges that are connected to this vertex. And of course, finds out all the neighbors those edges are pointing to. Then we apply some filters on what we have just found and figure out, so C is not important, doesn't match the filters. A and B are still okay. Now we have a result for depth one, but we said we want to go two edges. Next, what happens is the graph database picks one of those by random and does the same thing. So for example, we pick A, we have to look at all the edges connected to A and all the edge vertices. We apply the filters again. And now we figure out that S to A to E is actually a path of length 2. And all of those match the filters. So this thing would be returned. Can be some projection afterwards to just return the E element or whatever, whichever the user requested. But this is the thing the graph database has to compute to find the first result. Now we have the first result. We have to check, oh, do we need to find edges of E? No, because we don't want to have the third path, so the third step in our path. So we go back to A and check, is there any edge we haven't processed yet? In this case, there is no further edge that we have because this one was thrown out by the filtering. So the database goes back to the starting vertex and checks if there is any edge not processed. And in this case, we find B and now apply the same schema. Check the edges, apply the filter conditions, and if they match, we find an additional result. And what we just did is a so-called depth-first traversal. I'm starting at a point, and I first go as deep into the graph as necessary to find a correct result. And then I travel back up. An alternative is a so-called breadth-first traversal, where I say I start at the vertex. Then I first compute all vertices I have in depth 1. And after I have finished this, I'll start to compute all the vertices I have in depth 2, no matter if they start at A or at B or at C. And then depth 3, and so on. That, of course, changes the ordering of elements and allows for special conditions. So for example, if you remember the friends of friends, I can tell the algorithm, whenever you find something in the first step, do not visit it in the second step again. So the graph database can easily find those friends of friends and ignoring the first level friends. Let's talk a bit about complexity. How expensive is that? First, we have to find the start vertex. We have to pay this cost only once. And how fast we can find the start vertex depends on the indexes that we can use. Best case, we have an in-memory hash index with constant time lookup. Could also be a sorted index with log n lookup. If we don't have an index at all, full table scan, O of n. Then, and the more important thing is, for every depth, we have to do 4 steps. First of all, find all the connected edges. So we have a vertex in hand. What are the edges pointing out or pointing in into this vertex? This is typically done with a so-called edge index or index-free adjacency. I'll come to the differences there later in this talk. Important here, this operation needs to be in constant time. Otherwise, the graph database cannot compete at all, because this operation is the one that it will always do the whole time. Now, we need to filter non-matching edges. And we can only do this by taking one edge at a time and checking if it matches the filter or not. So constant in the linear in the amount of edges that we find. Then again, we need to find the connected vertices. Again, that depends on the index we can use. Best case, we have an in-memory hash index, constant time. But again, once for each edge. And of course, we have to apply filters for those vertices as well. All this can be done in a single path, so 3 times n costs. Linear complexity. Linear sounds evil, who thinks so? Oh, okay. Linear actually sounds evil, but the difference is it is not linear with the total amount of edges that you store. So you can store billions of edges, and still your simple traversals can be fast, because the traversal only depends on those edges that are actually connected to each of your vertices. So if you make sure you have only 20 edges connected to each vertex, you can store billions of edges, and still you can find all your results pretty fast. So traversals only scale with their result size or the amount of documents they actually have to check. They are not affected by the total amount of data. But, and this is an important but, the cost for traversal significantly increases with the search depths. Because the search depths means when I find n many edges in depth 1, it means I have to do 3 times n step for all those n edges again in depth 2. And thereby, the depth is actually the exponent of the complexity. And there's a scientific rule that for all naturally growing graphs, so social networks, everything where user interaction somehow connects those things, you typically find a so-called 7 degrees of separation. And the rule means pick any two random vertices. The shortest connection between those two is at most 7. I think in Facebook it is about 5 already. Because in Facebook you have some friends which you are not really friends to. But you just have more friends than you actually have. And thereby, the amount of edges increases and the difference between two vertices is smaller. If you don't believe me, just try it out on Facebook. Pick any random person you don't know yet and try to figure out how many people are in between. This has an implication, because whenever you have to formulate a query with a traversal depth between or above 7, it's actually cheaper to just dump out the entire database, because we will take a look at it anyways. So, a lot of theory. Now let's get a bit more our hands on some technology. I would like to introduce you to the open source project that I'm working on. It's called ArangoDB, and it's a multimodal database. Multimodal database allows you to store key-value pairs, documents, and graphs within the same technology, so just one core. It is not relying on different databases underneath, it's just one thing. And we have a unified query language that allows to query documents, graphs, key-value pairs, even do joins across document collections. And all of the above can be combined in a single statement. So I can start with a document query to find starting points for graph traversal, and the result of the traversal can be joined with key-value lookups, if I like to. And ArangoDB has asset support, including multi-collection transactions, which is not typical for the so-called for the NoSQL world. Let's talk a bit about the query language. And the query language is inspired by a lot of other query languages that do not have this relational select star thing, but more the programmer's point of view. So we are doing iterators. We start with for loops. And the query that we just see is the simplest query that we can imagine. For every user object that we find in a user's collection, collection is the term in ArangoDB that defines a table, logically grouped elements, just return the element that we find. So it's a simple select star from users. Of course, we can apply filters. So only return those users where the name is Alice. And of course, we will now find one object, which is called Alice. And the optimizer of AQL is clever enough to figure out, oh, there is this super awesome index stored on name. It's probably a good idea to use it in this case. So the query will be fast when indexed.
Is it smart enough to figure out breadth first or depth first?
No, because that changes the result. So you can do this with some options. But talking about depth first and breadth first, this is how you execute a graph traversal. So for product, in, and then we give the direction we want to follow, outbound, inbound, or any direction. Starting at the user, following has bought edges, and then just return the product. So in this case, we would figure out that Alice sometime has bought a TV. And of course, the entire thing can be combined with filters and even has some more return arguments. So if I say up to three return arguments, the first one is the vertex. The second one is the edge pointing to the vertex. And the third one is the entire path. So in this case, I have three steps starting here, 1, 2, 3. The PlayStation would be recommendation. This edge would be the action, and the entire thing would be the path. And whichever you need in your result, you can just return to the user. On the path, we can apply some filters. So for example, the second vertex entry on the path should be in the same age area as my user. So we apply some filtering on this object. And the optimizer figures out, as soon as the algorithm stands at this point, it checks this condition and can decide, oh, this one doesn't match, so we do not have to compute all the stuff that's going on here, so we can abort early. And of course, we can do some additional filterings on the other returned object, so for example, the recommendation, and combine it with limits, or with skip, or whatever, sort, whatever we need. And then can just return the thing that we need. But now let's talk a bit about the challenges that we have if we need to scale the whole thing. And the most common challenge is so-called supernodes, because many graphs have celebrities. So vertices with many inbound or outbound edges. So for example, if you take Twitter and you look at the amount of followers that, for example, Barack Obama has. I think he just has one or two more than I have. But he is a so-called celebrity. So whenever you do some traversals across Barack Obama, the entire traversal thing will take a lot of time because it has to linearly scan all the followers of him. If you go above me, you just check a couple of hundreds that I have, so it's pretty fast. So what you need to do is optimize for those cases whenever you have this naturally growing supernodes. And in most cases, you do not need all the followers, but you just need a subset of those. So for example, the newest 10. And in order to find those easier, you can do, or faster, you can do a so-called vertex-centric index. A vertex-centric index allows to index vertices together with arbitrary attributes on the edge. For example, a timestamp. You make this index sorted, you get in logarithmic time the newest follower of a certain vertex. And finding the next 10 is just taking the next elements in the index. And that's it. And with this trick, actually, we can figure out the initial set of edges that we need to look at in the linear step faster. And we have a reduced set of those. Thereby, we reduce this n and the complexity, and thereby, it's faster. And that this actually works, I will show you now in a live demo. So please cross fingers. Yeah, browser already a bit broken. OK, looks good. So this is ArrangoDB's web interface. What we see here, I have two collections. Can increase in size, just a second. One of those is a document collection. Documents are the vertices in our case, and edges are connecting those documents. Not a special data set, nothing fancy. However, on the edges, I don't have any indexes defined. So I have the edge index, and I have a primary index. And I don't have any indexes on the documents as well, but they don't matter for this query. So I'll just do a simple query, starting at one of my vertices, following the edges, and just return anything that I find. But important, I apply a filter condition on the first edge that I look at. So just execute this. And we get this result in 17 milliseconds on my local machine. 10 elements only in memory, of course. So not so important. But now I just go back, go to the edges, go to indexes, and say, I would like to add a vertex-centric hash index because I use equality. On from, because I'm doing outbound search. And value, which is the thing that I used my filter condition on. Create it. There we go. Now I'll go back to the query and execute the same thing again. 17.5 milliseconds. Off we go. 0.5 millisecond. Just because we could use the index, and we do not have to take a look at a lot of edges that we actually do not need in our query. Doesn't help always, but it's a good start. And it only works if you have certain attributes that you filter on edge level. So if you do so, make sure that you put some of the information into the edge as well. However, this thing was running on my local laptop. That's not the topic of this talk. The topic of this talk is big data, challenge 2. So whenever we have a graph that is larger than what fits on my machine. So we store everything that we can, as long as we are allowed to. So that means the data set easily grows beyond a single machine. So even if we have a super powerful one, our customers say, yeah, we do not talk to you if you don't scale up to 100 machines, because we cannot fit our data into a single one. We need 100 at least. And of course, this includes graph data. Now let's talk a bit about scaling. So it's pretty easy to distribute the graph on different machines, because we can just apply the general pattern, which is called sharding. Sharding means we just take out our scissors and just cut the graph into pieces and put those pieces on different machines. Pretty easy to do, but it gets hard to query. Why? First of all, it's not possible to get a global overview of the graph on a single machine. Assumption is it doesn't fit, so we cannot get it. And if we just cut the graph into different pieces, there may be edges between different servers. So not all data is stored locally anymore. And in a sharded environment, typically, or in most cases, network is the bottleneck. So every network operation slows down the entire query, because network is, of course, slower than local in-memory or even disk access. So we need to reduce the amount of network hops in our environment. Again, vertex-centric indexes can help with supernodes, but they only help for each machine. So not everything is solved by putting a vertex-centric index on it. Now let's distribute the graph. So dangers of sharding: only parts of the graph on every machine. Neighboring vertices may be on different machines. And if you remember how the traversal works, that means whenever we are on a vertex and we figure out, oh, our neighbor is on the other machine, we need to teleport over to the other machine, do some traversal stuff there, maybe teleport back. In some graph databases, for example, ArangoDB, even the edges could be stored on a third machine, making it even worse. So we need a mechanism for queries to be executed in a distributed way, and the results needs to be merged locally. And now we have the choice of several distribution techniques. So how can we distribute the graph across the service that we have? Simplest thing is what I like to call a random distribution. So I take a look at every object that I have in my graph, throw a dice, and depending on the result, I put it on one of those machines. Technical term here is consistent hashing of the key. Advantage: every server takes an equal portion of the data, so I can easily estimate how many servers I'm going to need for my data. It's easy to realize. It doesn't require any knowledge about the data. It just always works, which is a big plus, and it's easy to set up. Disadvantages: the neighbors are most likely on different machines. Probably edges are on other machines than their vertices. And a lot of network overhead is going to occur when we query, because the graph will end up like this on the different machines. No one can make up, okay, which were the connected components. And whenever we query, the query executor has to jump from here to here, back there, back there, back there, and so on. Will be rather slow. We can do some optimizations there, but not too many. However, it works, and I'm just going to show you. So now I'm leaving my single machine, and I'm going over to the cluster that is standing in our office in Cologne. I've imported a couple of data sets in here. Okay, that's good. For now, we will only focus on four of those collections. So I'll have profiles random, relations random, profiles smart, and relations smart. For now, profiles and relations random are the ones we go to. The data set that we imported is a social network called POCAC, which is available from Stanford University and contains the social data of some community. I think it's Czech, but I can't recall. The data set has 1.6 million documents, which have a serious amount of data stored to them, so quite large. And the relations are 30.5 million edges just connecting those profiles. There are no further attributes stored on the edges. And as you have seen by the name, or guessed by the name, this data set was imported with the random distribution. So I don't know where the profiles are located at. I don't know where the edges are located at. Neither does the query optimizer. However, I can execute, or I am able to execute, a query on those things. So query that I'm using, I'm doing a three steps traversal, applying some filter on level one and on level two. I only can apply filters on the vertices. Edges don't have attributes. And then just return whatever I find. I'm starting at one of those vertices and following the random distribution of the graph. Just increase those results, execute, and it takes a while. So roughly 1.5 seconds for 1,400 elements. I've taken a look at much more because I applied some filter conditions somewhere and thrown out a lot of stuff. However, it works, and in some cases this might be enough. But in most cases, it isn't. So we need to do something which is a bit more clever than this. Yeah, we had that. But first, let's talk a bit about index-free adjacency. So index-free adjacency is used by most other graph databases. For example, Neo4j, which you may know, which is the most well-known graph database nowadays. But Neo4j doesn't scale. So they have the hard limit that the entire DAF has to fit in disk of every machine in their cluster. If that doesn't fit, Neo4j breaks down, won't help at all. That's their condition. The reason why they have this is, in my opinion, the index-free adjacency. Because it means that every vertex maintains two lists of edges, in and out. And they do not use an index to find those edges because they are physically stored next to the vertices. How could we shard this? Of course, parts of those are easy because both sides of the edge are on the same machine. But what about the last edge? In ArrangoDB, we use a hash-based edge index, so constant time lookup, which is, in complexity theory, equal time that we need. But this gives us the advantage that the vertex is actually independent of its edges, and it can be stored on a different machine. So in our case, we can just pick any of those machines and store the edge too, and the other vertex then has to pay by a network hop. Now let's talk a bit about a more clever distribution of the data in a cluster. What we have seen is that many graphs have a natural distribution that actually divides the graph into subparts, which are smaller, and where most of the edges are within the same part, and rare edges go across those parts. For example, if you look at social networks, typically you have more friends from your local country or region than you have friends abroad. You have a few abroad, but most of them are local. For blogs, for example, blogs with the same tags are typically related. Products with the same category are typically related. So the features of these groups are most edges within the same group, rare edges between those groups. And if we just use this knowledge about our domain and actually shard by those groups, we can enforce that large parts of the graph, which is connected, end up on one physical machine. So we can still make some sense of this part, and some other part is somewhere remotely. And the enterprise version of RangoDB uses this domain knowledge for shortcuts and for optimizations. So let's do this. Close this one. Just go back to the same data. Oh, I think I haven't talked about the setup, right? So my setup has three physical servers, three database servers. Those are responsible for taking the data, for storing the data, and two coordinators. Coordinators are the user API, where you send queries to, and they figure out which database server is responsible for the data, pass the query to some optimizations. So each of those coordinators is on the same physical machine as one of the database servers. And of course, I have used three shards for my collections. I think I somehow lost connection now. Maybe it's the VPN. I had some trouble before. Just give it a second. And there we go. So, back again, same thing. So, we still have the same collections. So, relations random, profiles random, profiles smart. And now we are using the smart profiles. It's the entire same data set, but with a different distribution. So, we have taken the region that is stored in here to group those people together on the same machine. And if I now execute the same query, but starting in the smart distributed data set, so the only things that I change, execute the query, and there we go, 200 milliseconds. Just because we can do some shortcuts and most of the graph is stored on a single machine, and we have less network hops. Good. Next slide. How does it work, and why does it work so good? So first of all, this is the cluster setup that I've just talked about. So we have the coordinators, we have the database servers, and the graph is stored somewhere on the database servers. And now we are querying for a rather long path. And what we can see here, it's a good start here, then we need one network hop, another one back, because this one doesn't know, or this one doesn't know that's only one over there. Then we go back again, so already 1, 2, 3 network hops, 4, 5, 6 to find this path. And if we now do the distribution more clever, by just grouping those groups onto the same server, we still have one network hop, but only one. And then large part of the graph are actually on the other database server, speeding up the query process, of course. Good. What I've just talked about was so-called point search use cases. So I pick one specific point, and I'm searching around a small area for this one specific point. But some other graph algorithms require to touch larger portions of the graph. for example, the PageRank algorithm that Google uses. That actually needs to contact all the vertices that are stored in the database, because it needs to compute one score for all of those. Community detection. So finding those groups that I would just use for the smart graph distribution. Or friend score, the thing that Facebook does when it shows you, oh, you probably are friends with those guys as well. And of course, traversal is not suited for those tasks, because it would mean you first do a full collection scan to find all the starting vertices, and then one by one do the traversal process for those. Way too slow. So we need an alternative, and that is some batch processing algorithm. So we need more parallelism. So for traversals, we just do one local search, forget about it, do the next one. And for all the other vertices, we don't do anything. So we need to parallelize this more. Of course, we want to use the computational power of all the machines that we have at the same time. And still, we need to limit the network overhead. However, we need to accept that those algorithms are more or less offline, because they typically need to do a lot of processing work on a large amount of data. So probably not in a millisecond result time. And the framework that we use there, or we offer you there, is called Pregel. And it was initially developed by Google, initially for PageRank. And the idea of Pregel is that one worker has to be defined, and that runs on only one vertex at a time. And this worker can only see this one vertex and the outgoing edges, and nothing else. And then it can send messages to other programs or to other workers. This has the advantage that all the workers are independent from each other. So in theory, I could start all of them in parallel. I don't have any overlapping data because I only see my vertex and its outbound edges, nothing else. And I don't need any locks because I cannot write to anything that's not in my my outgoing edges or in my own data. So highly parallelizable. So what is the idea? We can spawn many workers on all those servers. Ideally, we spawn as many workers as we have CPU cores. One server is a so-called master and tells the other workers, now do the execution, please. The master can trigger several execution steps, so it waits until all the workers are done and then can tell them, oh, we are not quite there yet, please do another round of execution. So as soon as all the workers have reported they are done, he can start the next step, or he can decide, we are now there, let's terminate the algorithm and offer the result. So, picture for the workflow. The master has so-called super steps, and he is contacting the workers. So the workers are working independently and can send messages to one another. However, there is a global barrier. So in super step one, I can only read messages from the step before, so no messages. In step two, I can read the messages from step one. In step three, the messages from step two, and so on. And we have to wait until all workers are finished as at this global barrier. Let's make an example worker. First of all, we take all the incoming messages and sum up the result. Initially, this is zero because we don't have any incoming messages. Then we take a look at our vertex current score. Initially, one divided by the number of vertices. We add the sum that we computed over here to the current score and store the new thing as our new score. And then we send the new score divided by the number of edges to all our connected vertices. And then we say, we are done with this step. And the master can say, yeah, now please try again. And from now, we got messages from other servers, compute the sum, and send out sum divided by edges to all the other connected vertices. This is the PageRank implementation. And typically, we play it for 30 rounds. And we got a quite stable PageRank distribution across the data. And what we now find out is that vertices that have lots and lots of ingoing edges get a very high score. And vertices that have only lots and lots of outbound edges get a pretty low score. So, oh, this is no sneak peek anymore. So ArrangoDB 3.2, released a couple of weeks ago, shipped with the first version of Prigger. So we have support for batch processing in the graph area. And we have pre-implemented algorithms for PageRank, for community detection, and for so-called single source shortest path. So I can say, this is a start vertex. Please give me the shortest paths to all the other vertices that you have. And for some centrality measurements. So that's it. I still have 10 minutes to answer some questions. Thank you very much. If you like the project, please follow us on GitHub, on Twitter, and give us some stars on GitHub, because we're an open source project. So we live from GitHub stars. And thank you very much. Now I'm open for questions. Yes, please.
You mentioned that it's all schemaless, right?
Yes. So
I still have an implicit schema. Can I have some kind of schema migration?
Yeah. So the question is, ArrangoDB is schemaless. However, there is an implicit schema. And the question is now if we have some kind of schema migration from A to B. So in the ArrangoDB core, there is no such thing, because that is actually moved over to the application logic, so that you can do several versions of the data. But we have an extension which is called Fox, where you can define a REST API on top of ArrangoDB. So with using this thing, it has schema validation. And this can actually do the schema migration on the fly. So whenever you request through the Fox API, you do the schema validation, send out the new schema to the user, and store an updated version back to the database. But there is no built-in background process which says, oh, please upgrade my schema now. You're welcome. Yes, please. Yeah, so the question is, in the case that you have already running your application, you imported billions of data, and then you end up with a bad distribution and you don't know how to continue. So first of all, of course, you could call us and we could help you, sure. But to help yourself, you could, for example, run a community detection algorithm, which probably takes a while for such a large amount of data. But then it ends up with a pretty good distribution. So you would just reshard your data into the better distribution, and then your query should be faster again. Because then the feature is that most of the edges are in the same group. So that would be using the Prigger framework that we released with the newest version. Yes, please.
Can this be done in Drupal?
So there is no live resharding for changing the shard attribute, but you could just migrate over to a new collection or dump restore the data with new sharding. Of course, that could be done in a running system, but not in the background as a background process using the same data set. That is something we would like to add in the future. Yes, please.
I'm wondering, how does it handle concurrency? If you have everything split over multiple servers, and for example, you delete some address,
yep.
Do queries still work?
So the question is how it handles concurrency. And if you delete some edges, if the queries still work. So ArrangoDB has some transaction mechanisms in the cluster. So some guarantees, not fully asset in the cluster, which actually prevent those things that you run into, something which someone else is just deleting at the moment. So what ends up if you delete an edge and you're coming with a different query to this vertex, it will just not follow this edge because it's gone. And then it depends on the order of execution. So on single service, so in this case, the edge is located on a single server, we have this asset guarantees for the single instant, but not for the entire cluster view. So it's clear if you can see the edge or not, but maybe a bit non-asset across all servers. Yes, please.
Can you tell us something about roadmap to
the future? OK, so the question is about our roadmap to the future. So what we are working on is data center to data center replication. And that includes an even better transaction handling in the cluster, because we need that. Then we will add, I don't know if I'm allowed to tell this. OK. We will add an additional data model, so to say, which allows for rather good full text searches and even more. So that is something which is not yet fully defined, but that will be added in the next versions. And of course, we're doing some more optimizations in the cluster. So our focus point right now is cluster scaling. Yeah. Yes, please.
In terms of speed and performance, yeah. Comparing with other graph-grid libraries, do you have any numbers?
Yeah, so we have compared with other graph databases, of course. I only have an older version of the benchmark. So it is, to be honest, it is from 2015, I guess. Should be stated somewhere. There, 2015, end of 2015, where we actually compared against all the other specialized solutions. So as we did this benchmark, we said we are a multi-model, so probably are not as fast in the certain aspects as the specialized solution, and we just wanted to verify that. So we executed a lot of things that are pretty common operations in those engines. And we actually figured out that we are not that bad as we expected. So we thought maybe we get to 120% everywhere. So 100% is the fastest, 120 would be us. We are a bit better than that in the case where we executed those tests. So for example, if we are talking about the graph features, we have done shortest path, neighbors, and neighbors including the data. And the first neighbors is not including the data. So this is always, I think, neighbors 2 in this case. So neighbors of neighbors, distinct. Shortest path computation, we did pick some random points and just wanted to find the shortest path. What is this? So we are 7 times faster than Neo4j and 22 times faster than OrientDB. For neighbors, actually, we implemented a client-side neighbor search for MongoDB, which is 2 times slower than our implementation, but it is still 2 times faster than Neo4j's built-in single-step implementation of neighbors. And if we include the data, this all shrinks together, because then parsing the data, shifting the data across the network using the data set that I've just shown you takes over a significant amount of time. So there it's only 1.5 times faster because we have some computational or some performance gain on the simple algorithm. But shifting a lot of data across the network then is the bottleneck, more or less. But yeah, just leave it like that. Yes, please.
A question about this benchmark.
Yes.
You mentioned previously that Neo4j sources its neighbors immediately on the vertex itself.
Yes.
So do you have an explanation for how the neighbors search is so much slower in Neo4j than in
Strangle? So I think I have to make it clear again. So the neighbors in this case is neighbors of neighbors, so 2 steps. So which is named on the left-hand side, but not over here. And what we think, or what I think, is they store the vertex and then the list of edges, but not the other side vertex. Yeah, so only the edge which knows, oh, we have to look over there. And maybe this search over there is slower than we have it in our case. So finding the other vertices may be slower than we have. But I don't have that much insight. I just know the data format they have. OK, I just think I'll do I have time for one question? OK, thanks. Another one, last one.
Can you tell us how the difference between neighbors and neighbor profiles comes between Mongo and PostgreSQL?
So the difference in yes, yeah, okay, so the difference between neighbors and neighbors with profiles between ArrangoDB and Postgres Tabular. So the thing is, neighbors with profiles is not the same amount of data. It is less many neighbors because it took a long time already. And then I don't know why Postgres is actually faster. Sorry, don't know. Maybe the client implementation that we used is just better in serializing, deserializing the data. So this is executed in Node.js with the official drive of the vendor. No, all the databases were accessed by Node.js with their vendor offered driver. So maybe their parsing algorithm for the data was just better than ours, which is just JSON parsing in Node.js. Good. Thank you very much. Whoever likes a t-shirt, I have a couple of those, so please come up front and you can pick them up. Thanks.